flavor is everywhere.
From text to mechanics,
spicy pulls,
salty plays,
the sweet taste of victory,
and the bitter sting of defeat.
It can lead to sour faces
and umami friendships.
But all these flavors bring people together
for a gathering,
a potluck of creativity, skill, and above all,
magic. Flavor Profiles. I'm Nat.
And I'm Matt.
And it is your lucky day, because normally you're not supposed to talk about politics at the dinner table.
But tonight, everything is on the table. Unless, you know, you want to make a deal with me.
I don't know. I got to think about it.
I mean, I've got two open mana right here that say everything is just fine the way it is. They're forests, but that's not important right now.
Today we're talking about politics.
Which was another one of our write-ins after the Mill episode. We put out a call, and the call is still open. If you have an archetype or a style of play that you want us to kind of talk about and figure out where it fits in the flavor hex, we're going to do it. Otherwise, we're just going to pick whatever we want and go. But this show's not just for us, for you as well.
Yeah. So what do you think about when you think of politics and magic?
I mean, first off, I think of Commander. That seems to be a big place where it's leveraged. And there's also a little contention over it. Just like you don't talk politics at the dinner table traditionally, there's some people who feel you shouldn't talk politics at the Commander table either and frown upon it. I don't know. Yeah. I think it's kind of fun. I think it adds a little flavor to the game.
Yeah,
you get to play the villain.
I think in a casual environment, absolutely. I think politicking is so much fun. I think competitive and CEDH is where it gets a little tricky.
Emotions can run high in those pods.
Yeah. You're trying to win.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you're not trying to win in casual. I always try to win in casual, but I also like to have fun.
You're supposed to win in casual?
I mean, that's what I've heard.
Oh, okay. I'll have to try that sometime. What's your favorite use of politics, though, at the table?
I mean, when I play, I'm absolutely I'm not a deal maker necessarily. I'll make a deal every now and then, but I love pointing out people that could potentially be a bigger threat than me. look at that thing over there though. That's more impressive, which usually my threat assessment is pretty good. I feel like I'm strong at threat assessment, but sometimes I do use it as a tool to as a politicking tool to be you shouldn't swing at me when this person has this out.
I'm a big fan of using misdirection in that sense of pointing everyone away from me and just mentioning my board isn't anything to be worried about. It's just a sanctuary for animals of varying powers and toughnesses that you have nothing to worry about. They are just happy and content in their own little space until you anger them.
I tell people, never leave me at one life. Never leave me at one life, because I will absolutely use that as a misdirection. I'll be like, oh, well, I'm only at one life. So what am I going to do? Because I've sometimes found ways to come back from it. So I'll say gross.
Am I back?
Yes, you're back now.
So I'm starting to realize every time the train goes by in our backyard is one of the moments that everything freezes for me. It also freezes when the AC or heat kicks on, when the wind blows. when the house settles, or when we talk magic.
Yeah, seems good.
Yeah, you know, it's all inclusive. Going back to right before the freeze, you were talking about never being left at one, mm-hmm. which I think gets into something interesting with magic when you stream, is that politics sort of becomes an additional form of entertainment in the game for the audience.
Yeah.
And you can really lean into that. Keep me at one, I'm not a threat. Not just because you're never a threat when you're at one, are you, Nat? I mean, maybe. But it's also good to keep someone in the game if it's a little too early. You don't want to have the feel bad of someone sitting out because you're the first to go and then everyone is at a higher life total. The game goes on for another hour. And we've all been there, and, you know, it just happens. But I think you can really leverage it in that live form.
Yeah, that's true. It is an additional form of entertainment, for sure, when it's something that's being watched, when it's content.
And it gives you more banter. I mean, with the politics game, you can really play into being the heel, being the villain, being, like, I like to call it kind of salty sweet, where you get to play like you're a really salty player, but in reality, everyone knows that you're best friends with everyone in the pod and they're seeing right through you.
Yeah, that is true. That's true. Yeah. I think there's like the one exception of like people going back on their deals. Like, I don't think politics really are that frowned upon in casual. Mm-hmm. I think the only like feels bad are when people make a deal and then go back on their deal. Which is kind of frowned upon.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. I mean, just me as a person in general, I like being honest. I like being upfront. Like if I'm going to be silly and tricky in a game of Commander, it's going to be more of the, hey, don't attack me for three turns and I'll try and at least hold up my end of it. But, you know, every once in a while, something happens that changes the negotiations.
Yeah.
Or everyone gets goaded.
I'm very cautious when I take deals. Like, I will only take the deal if I truly think it will benefit me. If it'll benefit me and not just the person I'm making a deal with. Because mm-hmm. oftentimes, people will make deals where it's like, really, it only benefits them.
Mm-hmm.
But they like, I don't know. It's the politicking. They use it as like a power play, so to speak.
Yeah. And it goes back to having a good assessment of the board states around you, looking at what mm-hmm. information's available to you on the board, in the graveyard, potentially in a hand to determine what the best way forward is.
When I do threat assessment on a board, I look at what's on the board, of course. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if someone has a shield out, like they're the problem. But like, I also like to keep how many cards the person has in hand in mind mm-hmm. as well. I think people often skip by that when they're making threat assessments.
Mm-hmm.
And like how their deck has been playing.
Mm-hmm.
All of that information together kind of helps me figure out who is kind of carrying the game at that moment.
I think one of the big things overlooked when doing threat assessment is people forget that intent is half of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll just see a card on the board and think, oh, that's the threat.
Yeah.
Just a card sitting there. It's only the threat if there's an intention to use it against you.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how you know looking at cards in hand, because that can tell mm-hmm. you a lot. I like to kind of get a sense of what's in the graveyard and how it's gotten there. Or if you really want to get in depth to try and figure out what could happen in a game, look at their Mox field, because there's all the information you need.
That's true.
I don't think a lot of us go that far. We're more looking in like, oh, that's a good card, I want to do it. But if we wanted to get sneaky,
yeah.
That's like time and effort. And
I feel like people need to ask people how many cards they have in hand more. I feel mm-hmm. like people only ask that when they're like getting ready to cast like a wheel, or they're casting Jessica's Will.
Yep, that happened the other night. How many cards do you have in hand? We got a Jessica's Will coming. Like, no, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so I feel like people need to be more aware of that and need to ask that more. Ask how many cards they have in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times people will like board wipe without asking that first. And then there's mm-hmm. just someone who's obviously way more set up than the rest of the people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's going to have the advantage when that board wipe happens.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that Commander players need to do more. is ask their opponents how many cards they have in their hands, not just when they're about to cast something that you need to know that information for.
For a while, and I fell off it. On stream, I would always use an infinite token and write cards in hand and put like a D8 or a D12 or something where it was visible and just kind of cycle through it. Mm-hmm. Because it would be helpful, because if you're playing in a pod, if you're at an LGS, you're at a friend's house, you could see the cards in hand and at least get kind of a count.
Yeah.
Or the other thing I do, and I realize I do this subconsciously, is in between turns, I'll set my hand down on the playmat, spread out, and you can kind of see how many I have. Just.
Oh, I don't spread them out. I just stick them in a pile. So
I kind of do it as like, oh, you have 3 in hand.
Yeah. So I think that's something that people need to ask more and kind of politic a little bit better more in games. Mm-hmm. But why don't we shift gears? Because there's a whole nother side of politics for a game. And that's like almost literal politics.
Are you talking about something along the lines of an election?
Yeah.
Because this is the year.
Yeah, it is an election year. Voting. There's been quite a bit of voting that has come out over the past year. We saw it in a few places.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Doctor Who precon, the villains precon had the villainous choice.
Mm-hmm.
The Galadriel precon had, from Lord of the Rings, had voting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting mechanic in a game where you're getting everybody involved in a decision.
And everyone has a stake in what's about to happen. We're also getting a return to it in Murders, I believe, at Carla.
Mm-hmm.
And the clue set, I think, had at least one legendary from it exclusive. Let's see. Emissary Green that does voting. So it's definitely around to stay. And it's fun unless someone's playing Expropriate without a Widdith. Finish.
Yeah, true. But there's also things like those cards where it's like pay X mana, like each player can pay X mana and you all get something from however much mana people spend. Or there's the cards that an opponent can pay mana to help you cast something, which I've never actually seen someone do yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of interesting to like, you know, an interesting way to get, you know, players involved beyond just the obvious normal game actions.
Mm-hmm. In our earlier episodes, we talked a little bit about group hug, and group hug can be a form of politicking with some of the boons that come from that. Oh, would you like to draw a card?
Absolutely. Group hug is a major, major one like that. So, you know, I tried to build a Queen Marchesa politics deck once, and you froze. As soon as I said Queen Marchesa, you froze. Oh, welcome back.
All right. Yeah, when you said Queen Marchesa and politics, I just kind of started freezing up.
You just left.
I scooped.
You scooped. I built a Queen Marchesa deck that I was going to try to make it like all politics and all curses. Just to kind of like make the game chaotic.
I like chaos though in a game.
Not everyone does though.
You need the right group.
Yeah, I love a little chaos.
But it just goes to show a solid Rule Zero conversation can set you up for fun and chaos.
Yeah, true.
I still am eyeing a Rakdos-focused group hug, but a spiky hug. Everyone gets something. It just hurts.
Yeah. That reminds me, I played a cube this weekend at RC Denver. And it was a Descent into Avernus cube.
I'm intrigued.
You play with no lands.
Uh-huh.
And everyone has a Descent into Avernus emblem, like permanently. And so you use the treasures as your mana.
Mm.
And so it's like inherently like a Rakdos group hug cube, kind of. I played Rakdos. And it was silly. It was a lot of fun. I loved it.
I want to play that. That sounds like a blast.
Yeah. So I feel like that Rakdos group hug would be a really good way to like do politicking, I feel.
Oh, you want a damage? You could have a damage.
Yeah. But, you know, again, it's like, how do you choose who, you know, if you're doing group hug, how do you choose like who you're either giving cards to or hitting or
It's kind of a fun dichotomy with, hey, who wants to draw a card? And everyone's like, me. Who wants to take a damage? Them.
Yeah, so it's like...
Or not it, you know, everyone has a finger on their nose.
So it gives you kind of like a fun, like, people like making their case to you about like why they should or shouldn't be like getting the thing you're trying to offer them.
It goes from like a stump speech trying to get votes to a legal trial and everyone shouting, objection!
We started playing Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney in the game. It's fine.
I mean, as one should.
You know what adds politics to a game that is, it's kind of fun, is plane chase.
It does, because someone might want to stay on a plane, someone might want to leave. It's a good way to cut deals.
Because sometimes planes work really well, like the plane you're on works really well for one person, and everyone else is like, no, we can't let this happen. We got to get off here. So, you know, you kind of have that working together to try to change the plan.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good way to look at it. And you're talking about how we had voting kind of come back with Doctor Who, we had some additional plane chase cards come out with that. Mm-hmm. So there are always new planes coming around.
Yeah, we got some in March of the Machines last year too. So we had quite a bit of planes come out. I don't see people playing plane chase as often. But, you know, when given the option, sometimes people are like, oh, yeah, let's play plane chase.
I'm always down for playing it. I mean, you're going to be in for a very different game. It could be very quick or it could be a little bit longer. But you get the right crew, which is typically the case with most games. And it's fun. The hardest thing I find is if you don't have a set of plane chase cards or you're traveling and flying, it's extra stuff you got to carry around for it. Mm-hmm. There is an app though that has it built in for free. I believe it's LifeTap is the one.
Yes,
it's LifeTap. So LifeTap has a feature, if you go into their options and you can turn on plane chase, and it has all the cards in it and it will cycle through as if you rolled.
That's really cool.
They also do Arch Enemy, so it's been a great way if you're just traveling around and you can just throw a phone down and say, hey, let's play some plane chase, because I know I like having extra room when I go fly to a con, so I can bring back all the fancy swag and plane chase cards. While I do love taking them to play, take up space and wait.
Yeah, that's true. How do you politic in a game, Matt? Like, what are your favorite ways to politic in a game?
Oh, by just kind of playing innocent the whole time.
Yeah.
And a lot of begging and pleading. The moment I know it worked is when someone looks at me at the end and goes, you were the threat all along. And of course kills me.
I can't get away with that anymore. I used to be able to get away with that, but I can't anymore.
I'm slowly losing that ability after your assistance. I don't know why that would ever happen.
No idea.
We're both innocent, harmless, kind, and sweet commander players.
Yeah,
with decks full of infect, poison, toxic, and other scary things.
I will say I can politic easier with people I don't know. Like playing in a pod of people I don't know, I can politic a lot easier. Because, you know, people that I've played with before, they know me. So I feel like they know all my tricks. So, you know, they won't let me get away with as much.
Those are the games I like more, though. The politicking with friends, because you really crank it up a lot more.
Yeah, you try a lot harder.
And that's when the hilarity really comes about.
Yeah.
How many games have you gone through where someone eventually just goes, fool me once, you know? But at the same time, I'm going to take that deal.
You know, that's how I feel about my rival frenemy, Benji. Every time me and Benji play, Benji will not let me get away with anything.
That's when I play Beth. She just goes, I know Nat's your sensei. You're the first to go.
Yeah. So, I played in two pre-con events this past weekend. Mm-hmm. I won both of them.
Ooh, which deck?
The first one was the Bright Palm Shalayan Halar deck, which I know very well. I have a Shalayan Halar deck. So, And then the second one was Urza for Brothers War.
Mm-hmm.
That's Artifacts. And
it's a frightening deck.
Yeah, I was playing against some crazy decks, and I feel like the only thing that saved me in those games that allowed me to win was my politicking.
What was the deck you played against that scared you the most or incentivized you to politic more?
So the first one I was afraid of, there was a Pant Laza precon in my group, and which is Dinosaur Cascading, if people don't know. And the precon is just insane. Like, I kept the precon as is because it's just good as is. Like, it is really good.
There was the most surprising one for me from the set.
So I was scared of that one. The second game, I wasn't necessarily scared of it, but I definitely used the fact that someone was playing it to my advantage. Someone had the Eldrazi deck from Commander Masters, which I know it's slower and it like takes some time to like get cooking, but I used that to my advantage to kind of be like, oh, well, you know, the Eldrazi player that has the big things, as soon as they play this, they're going to cascade into big stuff. And so, again, deflection, you know, like, I'm harmless. I just have, you know, these little baby artifacts that, you know, it's fine. and so I kind of politicked my way through that game by using the person as, like, the threat, but they really weren't.
How do you feel about bluffing along the lines of politics in a game?
I think I think that one can be dangerous territory. I think it depends on what it is. I don't like when it feels like it's like intentional and it feels like they are going back on their word on something. But you know, if it's funny, like, heck, I love it. I have another example for this one. I played my Umbris deck. This was a long time ago. It was at Summit the first year. And we were playing with someone who said they like haven't really played Magic before. And I was going to put Umbris in the graveyard because I had a graveyard recursion spell. And Umbris costs a lot to recast. So I was like, I'm going to do this. And I was like, you know, I bet this. I was like, I'm just worried that this person has a Bajuka Bog. And the guy was like, I don't know what that is. And then he got to his turn and he played a Bajuka Bog. So it was kind of funny, though.
That's like the borderline one, I'd say.
Yeah. I guess like you had to have been there, but it was actually that, like, in that case, it was funny. I feel like if I wasn't like in such like a social situation where I was like playing, because the other people in my pod were like really close friends, and we all thought it was really funny. But like, if it was like someone who actually like knew how to play, like wasn't newer to the game and did that, then it would be like a little,
Yeah, it kind of becomes situational.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I'm always a fan of the image of the bluff. The, you know, the classic being leaving two blue mana open.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And a card in hand.
I have open mana.
Yeah. Oh, what do I got? I got something in hand. And it's more just for the silliness of it. I try not to do something of the, oh, I'm not going to play that, or I don't have one of those and then play it.
Yeah.
So I think it becomes situational more than anything.
Yeah.
There's kind of a hierarchy of politicking almost.
Yeah, it's true. There's like, I mean, that's how politics are in general, I guess, too. Although, again, talking about politics at the dinner table is frowned upon. So
yeah, we're just talking about politics and Commander.
Yeah.
The fun politics.
Exactly.
But I mean, kind of segueing off of the naughtiness of discussing politics, why don't we look at some of the villainous choices that came up?
Yeah.
I mean, before we started recording, we were both talking about Davros, Dalek Creator, I think is the one. At the beginning of your end step, create a 3/3 black Dalek artifact creature token with menace if an opponent lost 3 or more life. And then each opponent who lost 3 or more life this turn faces a villainous choice. Dun, dun, dun. You draw a card or that player discards a card.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when it's like two bad options. When it's like there's no good answer to it.
It's really interesting to make someone choose between two bads. Like, which is the lesser evil? Is it worse that your opponent draws a card or that you discard a card?
Yeah, true.
Or Missy, each artifact creature deals 1 damage to that opponent, or you draw a card and chaos ensues if you're playing Plane Chase. We have about 12 options, it looks like, for villainous choice off of Doctor Who. Yeah. And all of them are flavorful if you're a Whovian. Mm-hmm. And I don't really want to be on the wrong end of any of these.
Yeah. There's actually a really fun card. It's called Grudge Keeper. Mm-hmm. It says, whenever players finish voting, each opponent who voted for a choice you didn't vote for loses 2 life. And the flavor text on there is, your defiance is noted.
Oh, that's good. And it's just a common.
Yeah, it's just a common.
The art's fantastic on that, too. Zombie with a very, very long list of names. You know, one thing that some of our listeners might not know is you finally acquired a giant card this past weekend.
I did.
And just along those lines, I think Grudge Keeper would make a fantastic giant card.
Yeah, it's not a recent card. It's about 10 years old. I don't think we'll ever see a giant card of that, but I do really love the flavor text on that.
The flavor text is good. The art's good. The mechanic's good. That's 10-10 for me. Yeah. I think I need to build a deck where I can throw that in just for the heck of it in case voting comes up.
I had kind of built a voting deck. It's mostly the Doctor Who pre-con, but I added in other voting cards. Mm-hmm. I brewed it up. I don't think I'm ever going to build it, but, you know, it was kind of fun to build that. My favorite villainous choice card from that deck is Ensnared by the Mara. That one is so good. So
each opponent faces a villainous choice. They exile cards from the top of their library until they exile a non-land. Then you may cast that card without paying its mana cost, or that player exiles the top 4 cards of their library, and Ensnared by the Mara deals damage equal to the total mana value of those exiled cards. Yikes. I love it.
It's a fun card.
Oh, that I really love that one. My favorite from the Doctor Who set, I think, is This Is How It Ends.
Yeah.
That one's just heartbreaking knowing the story behind it, but it's fun for an instant. 3 and a black. Target creature's owner shuffles it into their library, then faces a villainous choice. They lose 5 life, or they shuffle another creature they own into the library.
Oh, I hate that.
And then the flavor text, there's a gravestone here for someone with the same name as me.
Spoilers. All right, well, I haven't gotten to this part yet, but I know what happens. It's going to make me cry when it happens. I just know it.
It made me cry.
Yeah.
But it's worth it to watch.
Oh, yeah. I haven't watched. I had been watching, as you know, Doctor Who, like, pretty regularly, but then I kind of stopped and I fell off the wagon. I haven't watched it in a while, so.
I just got to 13.
Okay.
So I started through that. I was sad saying bye to Capaldi.
Yeah, you really liked Capaldi.
I missed out when he first appeared just because of a move and losing track and whatever cable package we had didn't have access to it. And I finally came back to it and was hooked immediately. Just sucked me in. But yeah. I still got more episodes to watch, so.
True, true.
Now I want you to watch the episodes related to This Is How It Ends.
I'll get
not,
there.
Not for the sadness, but just so we can talk.
I know. I'll get there.
I don't think we have a whole lot else in the realm of politicking from mechanics.
No.
Do we want to shift to where we can be found coming soon?
Yeah.
So last weekend, Nat went off and had a fun little adventure in Denver at DreamHack. Definitely go check her account for lots of cool photos and fun with friends that was going on down there. Some amazing cosplays. Mm-hmm. But the big thing coming up, which will be over a week after this drops. It is too soon. I am still not ready. I know I said this last episode, nothing has changed. But we will be in Chicago.
We will.
For MagicCon.
We will. We'll be in Chicago all weekend. If you want like a designated time to come find us, Sunday morning, we'll be at a meet and greet booth. Mm-hmm. So come get, we have some stickers. If you want a sticker, come get a sticker.
Come get the last of our old tokens that we have before we start working on new ones.
Yeah.
I think I have a handful.
Yeah. You can hang out with, Matt, probably to play Commander a lot of the weekend. Otherwise, yep. I'll be at the Magic Kids booth. And if you want to play some Oathbreaker, you can come play, that with me.
go play Oathbreaker if you haven't. It is so much fun.
Yeah, if you haven't played Oathbreaker and you don't have a deck, it's totally fine. Just come to the booth. I will have a bunch of decks to choose from, and you can try it. It's really fun. It's like a faster version of Commander with actually less banned cards, which makes it a little chaotic, but it's really fun.
And you get to have all of the Planeswalkers you ever hope to have in the command zone there.
Yeah. True.
And at the same time, if and around there, you need someone to enable you to buy silly things while wandering around, we're both readily available to be those devils on your shoulder saying, yeah, you should totally get that.
We're really bad about that. We enable
each other.
Yeah. To make purchases.
Every con we're at together, I now pack a separate dice bag. And when that is full, I am no longer allowed to listen to Nat saying you should buy that pair.
Yeah. If you wanted to go to Chicago, unfortunately, and didn't get a ticket, unfortunately, tickets are now sold out. However, there are still tickets to the House of Clue party, which is an after party at the House of Blues in Chicago. Tickets are still available for that. I believe me and Matt will both be there.
Friday night.
I'm kind of trying to get people to wear fancy attire, like fancy dinner party attire. So it's been working so far.
I'm going to wear a fancy suit. I'm probably going to start starving myself tomorrow to make sure I can fit back into it.
So it'll be a lot of fun. So if you're going to Chicago, please come see us and say hi and tell us your favorite episode so far.
Mm-hmm. Tell us what your favorite flavors are, what flavors you'd like us to talk about, or just what you're excited about in Magic, either coming out later this year or something from your time playing. And if you can't make it to Chicago to see both of us, there are other cons coming up throughout the year. SCG Philly will be 2 weeks later. I'll be there hanging out for the Fallout drop. If you want to get in a couple games of Commander there or even play an RPG or two, I might be running a few Fallout themed one-shots just to be silly.
That sounds really fun.
So look for us at a con near you this year. And as always, if you can't find us in person, you can find us online. And with that, I think we'll be seeing everyone next time for another episode. Been great having you in our kitchen.
Let us know if you have a favorite flavor on socials.
We can be found on Twitter, YouTube, and everywhere your favorite podcasts are served up.
Just search for Flavor Profiles.
Our music is by Cormac Bluestone.
Thank you for listening.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Nat.
Until next time.
Until next time. Keep cooking magic.